Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Feel good this winter by getting the flu vaccine at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And we go now to the tragic situation in Libya, because in the last hour, the Libyan government has confirmed that the number killed in the floods in the east of the country has reached 5,300. And they also say that figure could double. One minister said the sea is constantly dumping dozens of bodies of people who were washed out when Storm Daniel hit and dams in the city of Derna burst. Journalist Johar Ali is in Turkey, but he's from Derna, and he told me about speaking to his family and friends there. And a word of warning, some listeners might find some of what Johar describes distressing. I began by asking him what his friends and family have been telling him.
After the floods came to the city, I lost contact with my family for more than 40 hours. But happily, yesterday night, I managed to communicate with my family, my direct relatives, I mean, and they're okay. And that's because they're lucky enough to be happening to live in a neighborhood where the floods didn't came. Only three neighborhoods out of almost 13 in the city survived this event. But, you know, Derna is a small city. All of us are relatives. So my direct family is okay. But all of the city, we have thousands of casualties right now, sadly.
And what are they telling you about what the situation is like there? We've seen the television pictures of the absolute devastation.
It's more than an earthquake. It's an earthquake, a tornado, floods. Everything happened to the city. What happened was enormous, beyond imagination, undescribable. I mean, some people describe the event of seeing women's hanged in the lights in the streets, because the floods took them from their apartments where they were sleeping and threw them there. And they are dead. Some people describe children thrown in the streets, some of them crying beneath buildings. No one can help. Until now, the rescue missions did not come inside the city, especially international and professional teams did not come inside the city. Only one country sent rescue teams who got inside the city. The city is disconnected out of the outer world because of what happened. All the roads leading to the city are disconnected, and the internet and the electricity, and there is no clean water, there is no food, there is no shelters. The people are right now currently in the safe neighborhoods, laying beside dead bodies. There is a huge and enormous danger of a humanitarian disaster coming if we didn't have like an international real intervention.
As you say, it's unimaginable what you describe and what your friends and family have told you. Our understanding is, though, that the aid community and the rescue workers are coming, that they're coming in the next number of days. I know the people that you've been speaking to want to see them now, but are they able to take some comfort in the fact that help may be on the way?
To be honest, 100%, they don't have any comfort in that. People are now just asking for the dead bodies to come out as soon as possible. The smell of dead bodies is growing in the city. The sounds of people beneath wrecked buildings is indescribable, as I've mentioned. Also, the people right now are losing faith. And not just in international help, but also in the local governments and the local authorities, because they didn't pay enough attention for rescuing our people, you know? People are helping themselves by themselves, using their bare hands and small shovels to get their families' bodies out of the dirt and out of water, and waiting just for the help of God. They are not waiting for anyone. They don't have comfort in anything. They are in complete shock after what happened. I'm talking to you right now where my friends are nearby. One of my friends lost all of his family, his father and mother and his sister and two brothers and his newly married wife and his small baby, 8 months old baby. Another friend is right now beside me. He lost his uncle, all of his uncle's family, his daughters and his sons another cousin of his, another friend currently beside me. All of us are journalists who are displaced from the city. That's why we know each other and we are currently supporting each other. My last friend, almost all of his cousins in the city are lost. He know that one of his relatives is dead. He don't know what's the fate of his small nephews. And that's the situation of all of the citizens of the city. Mm-hmm. You know, we are 100,000 almost in the city. 25% of those are either lost or dead. That's the situation in there.
Johar, does it make you want to go back? I mean, you must feel conflicted about that, do you?
I don't know what I want right now. Going back to the city is still dangerous for a journalist as me. To be honest, the city is under military rule, even with this disaster. You can't get inside the city before going on military checkpoints. If I go there, I know that they will capture me and put me in jail because I'm a freelance journalist who write about what happens there day by day. Mm-hmm. And even covering this event on an international scale, such as we are doing right now, will harm their image in front of the international community. So that's why I'm really sure that if I go back, I will be in prison rather on ground.
Just to come back, Johar, to the political situation there, we know that the heavy rains fell and that was attributed to Storm Daniel. But we also had the collapsing dams just outside Derna and criticism of local government there that they didn't maintain those dams and the infrastructure in the city.
That's completely right. Not only the government that we are having right now, the governments before and even the government that we had before the revolution itself. This dam always... And was a huge threat to the city. People feared what could happen if it's exploded, as they fear death, because it can bring death with it, and it did. They always communicated authorities and asked for support and ask for repairs to be made to the dam and ask for things like that. But as you know, in a country like Libya, the authorities don't pay attention for such thing. And what happened has happened. So this is not the time to blame anyone. It's the time to save people as much and as soon as possible. But to be accurate, all of the authorities are asked about that and they all share the responsibility of what happened.
And that was Johar Ali speaking to me a little earlier. Now, aid agencies are seeking to gain access to Derna and surrounding areas. I'm joined now by Mary Fitzgerald, Libya specialist at the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C., and from Tripoli by UNICEF communication and advocacy officer Amil Barghouti. Mary, to you first. We heard Johar there saying now is not the time to try to seek to blame people. But the truth of it is the current political situation in Libya is less than stable, to put it mildly.
Yes, indeed. As one Libyan wrote on Twitter the other day, pity the nation that has two governments, but no one governing, which basically sums up the frustration a lot of Libyans are feeling now in the wake of this catastrophe, but also before this disaster unfolded. There are two entities in Libya that claim to be governments. Only one of them internationally recognized. That government is in Tripoli, in western Libya. The region that has been affected by these floods is in eastern Libya. It has its own self-declared government over there. But as Johar just outlined, what is essentially the real power in eastern Libya is a form of military rule overseen by Khalifa Haftar, a commander who has his own forces based in eastern Libya. So this complicated politics, these divisions that have been there for a number of years now, even though Libya has had a fragile ceasefire since 2020, made all kinds of challenges Libya was facing far more complicated and is likely to complicate the relief efforts in terms of this disaster. Mm-hmm.
But Libya has been quick to call for international help. We know in Morocco some of the offers of help weren't responded to, certainly in the early days. What do you make of the government's response so far to this flooding disaster?
Well, I think a key difference between Morocco and Libya is that Libya just simply does not have the capacity for a disaster of this proportion. Morocco obviously did not expect the earthquake either, but Libya is a country that has experienced since 2014 until 2020, 6 years of very punishing civil conflict. Its civilian infrastructure throughout the country has been in such a state of deterioration. The political divisions, but also just on a capacity level, Libya doesn't really know where to start when it comes to tackling what it's now faced with.
Amil is on the line as well from Tripoli, UNICEF Communication and Advocacy Officer. Amil, you're welcome to the programme. Johar told us all about the devastation in and around Derna. Are aid agencies able to get in yet?
Hello, thank you so much. Yes, UNICEF Libya is working closely with the Libyan Red Crescent Society, our partner on the ground. They're already in Derna. They have access to, Derna has one access mainly from Tobruk. It's mainly for medical referrals to get people out, like displaced people and everything. But they're working day and night also with the rescue teams, with the cell crisis, with WHO as well. To get people out, do referrals, and also supply them with life-saving materials.
I just see on the wires, you know, that the numbers are scarcely believable. I mentioned 5,300 confirmed dead. That could double, 30,000 people displaced. Who knows how many people have been injured now? How do you deal with something on the scale of this, and what's the immediate plan when it comes to help?
What is happening now, like it came to our surprise yesterday morning, it was like unpredictable with the increasing number of deaths, with the increasing number of internally displaced people, also the missing people are number are huge. What we are doing now is doing a life-saving interventions in terms of access to shelters. Today we're focusing on shelters for displaced people. We're also trying to have a safe access to safe water, as well as to basic medical referrals and interventions. This is our top priority right now as the UNICEF, also a UN response. In the upcoming day, UN is doing a joint assessment, and we're dealing with that, for the long and the short also term plans for UN. We're trying to mobilize some resources. We know that Libya has been out of the humanitarian aid because of Ukrainian, Syrian, Turkish earthquake. So Libya, the resources are a bit scarce, but now we're trying, and we're also calling for mobilizing, putting more investment, more resources to do in this period, a life-saving intervention.
Amil, thank you very much for joining us. That's Amil Barghouti there from UNICEF. Mary, to come back to you, we've seen the destruction that Storm Daniel has brought. That just highlights the challenges that climate change in general is going to bring, particularly for this part of the world and for countries like Libya.
Yes, indeed. Libya is considered one of the most vulnerable countries when it comes to climate change. And this is something that the Libyan authorities, whether in the east or west, have been in a real state of denial regarding what needs to be done in terms of preparing for that future threat. This immense tragedy that has happened this weekend hopefully will be something of a wake-up call in terms of what Libya is likely to face in the future. But also we're already seeing Moroccans and Libyans and people from other countries in North Africa, basically looking at this weekend of two tragedies in their region and saying that this shows the need for regional coordination, regional cooperation in terms of how North Africa as a region meets the challenges of climate change and extreme weather and patterns in the future.
Well, how difficult will that be to have regional coordination?
It is likely to be very difficult. I mean, given the tensions between Morocco and Algeria over the Western Sahara region, other divisions and difficult histories between different countries in the region, all of that will make it very, very difficult. But I think what certainly activists across the region have been calling for in recent days is basically the need to overcome those divisions, so to speak, and see that there are shared challenges here that need shared solutions.
Mary, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Mary Fitzgerald, Libya specialist. We'll take a quick break.